Hi, and welcome to the Finally Pregnant podcast, the podcast for people who are finally pregnant after infertility and loss. I'm your host, Kat Strawbridge, and after almost 7 years trying, multiple rounds of fertility treatment, which sadly included pregnancy loss, last year I was finally pregnant, and now I am finally parenting my gorgeous daughter, Ren.
Hi there, everyone. Kat here. Hope you are all doing well. We are at the end of week two, going into week three of lockdown. And I know that everyone, well, I certainly, and when I posted about it, everyone agreed, feeling really up and down. There are good days and bad days, and then there are days with kind of good and bad bits in it. So I'm sending lots and lots of love and hugs to all of you out there, especially to those of you who are pregnant, because I know that, you know, every few days you're getting updates from the Royal College of Obs and Gynae, just giving different information. I know it's a bit kind of scary because we don't necessarily know what's going on. Different hospitals have different guidelines or kind of things that they're working to. My sister is, one of my sisters is a midwife, and she is out there delivering babies. There are amazing people doing incredible work, supporting you and protecting you and making sure that your babies are being delivered safely, which is just incredible. And you might have seen on Instagram, actually, that Shima, who I spoke with on my last episode, had a beautiful daughter, Lyra, last Wednesday, which is incredible. She had a few days in hospital, and then she's home now with her husband and her little boy, Barry, which is just beautiful news. Today, I'm going to be talking to Sarah Wilkinson, who is a fabulous friend of a fabulous friend, Emily. You know who you are. And she is going to be talking to us about what's actually happening during labour, because she is a consultant anaesthetist. So that's going to be really, really interesting, I know, because a lot of people are wondering what is actually going on in the labour wards. And so hopefully Sarah will be able to answer your questions. Just before we head over to her, I want to remind you that there is the Hangout. If you are finally pregnant after infertility and loss, or finally parenting, then you can come and join our community, where you can speak safely about your worries, your concerns, your complaints, your joy, your happiness, all of those things. Because of COVID-19, we are now having two support groups a month. So they are online support groups. They always have been. This isn't just a COVID thing. But yeah, so the first one is the 7th of April. So that's Tuesday, the 7th of April. And the next one this month will be on the 21st of April. And we do have a guest actually joining us for that. We have the wonderful Julianne from Parenthood in Mind. She's going to be really helping with all of our emotions around being pregnant and giving birth and parenting new babies specifically in this time. So that's going to be a really, really powerful support group. So make sure you join us. But for now, we're going to head over to Sarah. And Sarah, thank you so much for taking time out to speak to us. You must be incredibly busy at the moment.
It has been crazy the last few weeks, but we're still all doing our normal jobs, just in a different environment. And the reason why I wanted to speak to you is just to try and get out there what is actually happening in hospital, and to alleviate hopefully some of the anxieties that understandably many women will have, especially at this time when the world has gone pretty crazy. But as you said, babies are still being born and miracles are still happening and families are all going home to be happy together. So that's what we're trying to achieve.
Amazing. Thank you so much. And you do work in a top London hospital. We're not going to say specifically, because we are aware, and you're no doubt going to reference this as well, that unfortunately, you know, especially if you're a listener, you're thinking unfortunately, it'd be interesting to hear from your point of view as well. Not all hospitals are running the same schedules necessarily. So, you know, we don't want to single any out, but you're going to talk in a general kind of frame around what is happening and what's changed as well.
Yeah, so certainly all hospitals have had to reconfigure services in different ways, depending on lots of things, geographically where they are, the logistics of how the hospital is set up, the staff that work there, and the type of facilities that the hospital have. So there will be differences, but most hospitals should be working from the guidelines that have been given. And although these are changing, the guidelines that have been given by the Royal College of Midwives, the Royal College of Obstetricians and Gynaecology, and the Association of Anaesthetists who specialise in obstetric anaesthesia as well. So all hospitals should be working within that framework, but there will be individual differences. But hopefully I can try and explain why we've had to make some of the changes that we have, and how that would affect birth to some degree, but how lots and lots of things are still happening exactly as they would, albeit we're wearing silly masks. Otherwise, a lot of stuff is still happening completely as normal.
Just on the masks thing, as kind of a light note, but I saw a post the other day, and it was how a smile when you walk into a room really alleviates, you know, kind of some of the tension that you're feeling. And one of the doctors, because obviously you're all masked up now, and he had kind of full kit on, he had sellotaped, or, you know, stuck to himself a picture of himself where he was smiling with an introduction, hi, I'm, you know, and his name, etc. And I just thought that was a really, really lovely touch, because it's true, isn't it? Just, you can't necessarily, and well, is it true, you know, in this instance it was, that you can't necessarily see people's faces. Are you wearing masks? Are you wearing eye guards? Are you wearing kind of full suits? How, what do you look like when you walk in?
The only time when people are wearing full suits is if there's likely to be a general anaesthetic. Otherwise, what we're wearing on labour ward is probably some clear plastic goggles and a surgical mask, maybe an apron and some gloves. So you can still see the eyes pretty clearly, but you can't see the smile. And I always say to the patient straight away, or the woman, I am smiling under here, because it's hard to see when someone's smiling. We know that because the surgeons we work with are always wearing those masks. So we've learned to look at their eyes a bit more to see that, you know, and the eyes tell some of the story, but it is hard not to see a smile. But I think you can still tell if someone's smiling, the tone of their voice, other things like that, and the general sort of ambience of the situation. You can still smile in other ways, I guess. But that's brilliant, yeah. Sticking the picture on. That's a good idea.
Yeah, I thought that was genius. Very good. So tell us what your days are like now. Why is it different to how it was 3 or 4 weeks ago? What can people expect?
Well, I think it isn't that different, actually. Apart from, the biggest difference that I've noticed is the increase in anxiety of the women themselves, not being sure how their birth experience is going to be in this time. The work is still exactly the same. The only thing that's different really is it takes us slightly longer to do things because we've got to put all the gear on, and we have slightly more difficulty communicating with each other, as we talked about smiling with the equipment on. But other than that, the work that we're doing, now that things have settled down and we have a routine with the equipment that we're wearing and how things are working, is really the same. The colleges haven't suggested big changes in what we do in terms of how we deliver women, in terms of letting women breastfeed, in terms of, you know, they haven't really suggested anything. They've only suggested changes which are to protect us from getting infection, to protect other women on the ward from getting infection from people, and to keep the traffic in the hospital to a minimum, to allow everything else that needs to happen in the hospital to go on. So our day-to-day work, apart from the fact that we are now as consultants doing more of the work because our junior doctors have been deployed elsewhere, is very similar. You know, we're still providing an epidural service, we're still getting involved in looking after our high-risk patient on the ward, we're still pre-assessing our patients, we're still following people up. So our work is the same, just with a more of a slant on the increased infection control, really.
And I have to ask this question, and like, this is not about scaremongering, because what I want this podcast to do really is support, you know, help people with their fears. But when I was in labour, I wasn't going to have an epidural, and then that changed, and the anaesthetist was in a surgery at the time, in theatre at the time, so I had to wait a few hours for mine. Now, what you've just mentioned there is that some of your junior doctors are off, you know, being redeployed. So your staffing is reduced because of all of this, which is totally understandable. Is that the case with anaesthetists? You know, are there going to be longer delays because of that?
So in our trust, as things are at the moment, our staffing is not reduced. In fact, our staffing is now the same as it was, but the people doing it are more senior. So actually, that's a better position. There will always be a finite resource, and sometimes people do have to wait for an epidural, but our plan is not to make people, you know, we are contingency planning, so we don't have to make people wait longer because of this. But there are lots of other logistical reasons. You know, if you only you only have one person on the labour ward at night, they'll have to get a second pair of hands to come if you're in theatre. So that, but that has all been contingency planned, and that's in my trust. Obviously, different trusts will have different levels of staffing, but certainly that we're trying to mitigate that. Some people do have to wait for epidurals for various reasons, but COVID-19 should not be a reason.
I think that's really reassuring. Thank you. Like you say, you can't speak for all other trusts, but, you know, that's something. And it does make sense that people are trying to avoid, you know, as much as possible. And the fact that people are seeing more senior staff, you know, I can't imagine there being a single complaint there at all about that. And what about the anxiety? So we talked a bit before we came on to record, but I was explaining to you how, particularly for those who are finally pregnant after infertility and loss, there is so much more that's happening in that pregnancy. Now, I can't speak for someone who has got pregnant naturally and the levels of anxiety, you know, for them, because I haven't been in that situation. But I know for our community specifically, you are so nervous about being pregnant because of everything that's gone before. And then you're putting off things because you're jinxed. You don't want to jinx it. And right now we're being potentially rushed into panic buying, or like you did mention earlier on, I feel like things are calming down a little bit. Mm-hmm. Just so that everyone knows, we're recording this on the 5th of April. So, you know, like I say, we're kind of week 2 to 3 on lockdown. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't want to buy things, but we're sort of being rushed into panic buying. We are nervous about doing things like pregnancy yoga, and now we can't do them. So there's a lot of grief that's happening on top of an already difficult pregnancy. So our anxiety levels when we come in to see you are through the roof, like no question. How are you seeing that manifest itself, and how can you and your staff help and support our, you know, our community as much as possible? Well, anyone who's pregnant, like I say.
So I think, I mean, I've seen some amazing initiatives coming out as things have started to settle down. And we've all had a big shock from this as well. We've all had to change what we do. We've all had this hit us in the face in the same way that everyone else has. So we've all had to adjust. But I've seen some brilliant things. I mean, obviously, there's so much online support. Our trust, someone was filming us wearing our gear the other day and putting it up on the website so people know what we're going to look like if we're wearing our gear. There's lots of you know, things that are happening to alleviate that anxiety. We know that we have to step up and help people when they come into hospital with that anxiety. And we know that if partners or first choices of partners can't be there, that we then have to step up and do more to support that woman. And we do understand with every birth, there's anxiety, you know, whether it's after fertility problems or not, there's huge variations in people's anxiety. And we're all used to dealing with that. Midwives are used to dealing with that. And we know that there's more anxiety now. So, for example, when I saw some patients who were going to be coming for cesarean section last week, I just took more time to talk to them and to explain things, and then they feel better. And that's just what we've got to do. We've got to step up to this as well. But I think as much information from the right sources is really important, as little scaremongering is important. The internet is brilliant for giving people advice, but it's also dangerous in that it can sort of perpetuate anxiety and make it worse. So I think we need to point people in the direction of, you know, the websites, as you have done previously in your podcast, I think, and just give people the facts and give people alternative ways. You've mentioned the pregnancy yoga. There is still, you know, online yoga that you can do. So it's just sort of changing your mindset and working around what is possible in this situation, which is difficult. I mean, you know, people who already have children are having to do that with the homeschooling. We've all got to just change how we've thought about things and change what our plans were a little bit. But we've still got the same end point, which is to have a healthy, happy baby at the end of it. And that is happening all the time.
Yeah, and that is the focus. And I'd say that one of the good things, which isn't good necessarily, but is that we are all in this together. Like you say, everyone is having to readjust, you know, and their lives and how they go about them and everything they're doing. And it's after so long for people who are finally pregnant now. it's just, it's sod's law, you know, like you go through so much and then you're finally there and then suddenly, bang, you can't necessarily have your partner with you, which I'd love to talk about actually. And then, you know, having your family come in and meet the baby there, you know, after you've had them, it's just, it is unfair. All of this is unfair. You know, there's no question about it. So if you're out there listening, like I am there with you. Sarah is here nodding her head. Like it is just massively unfair. It really is. But we're here to support you. And we want to, as Sarah said, achieve that end goal of you going home happy and healthy with your little one. That is the most important thing. So if you could talk to us, Sarah, about the partner situation, the birthing partner, is because we're getting mixed reviews, you know, are they able to join us?
So yes, at the moment, I can't say that things won't change, but I know that from all of the colleges and all of the advice we know, everyone knows how important it is for someone to have a birth partner, to have someone with them for their birth. A lot of there has been some discussion about whether partners should be allowed in theatre or not. And I think at the moment, partners are allowed in theatre. And then the discussion is around how long they're allowed to be there for. The rationale about not letting partners come for the entire time. Obviously, if you've got an open ward with lots of people on, some of whom will have symptoms and some of whom won't, but some would potentially be carrying COVID-19. The more people that you have in a small area, the more chance there is of transmission. And so that's not just to staff, but to each other as well. Certainly on our antenatal ward, we don't have lots of bathrooms for visitors. Not every room has its own ensuite bathroom. So if you put those people together with all their partners, those partners are all going to be sharing the same toilet and the same bathroom. And that goes against all the social distancing advice. Also, what we don't want is lots of our staff becoming unwell and then us being in a more dangerous position, effectively, because we're understaffed. We need to keep our staff there to do their job. And so that is, although on an individual basis, incredibly difficult not to have your partner with you the whole time, it's sort of having to think of it on a more kind of societal basis, really, like all the stuff that we're having to do at the moment, and just try and minimise infection as much as possible. In the birthing rooms, everyone gives birth in their own room, usually, sometimes in the corridor, but usually in their own room. So therefore, the birthing partner can stay with them in the room where they are able to distance themselves from, you know, other people. Obviously, they may still need to go and use the bathroom and do things, but they are there for a shorter amount of time. And the shorter that time is, the less chance there is of spreading things around. That's providing that the partner doesn't have any symptoms. So if the partner has symptoms, then it would be really fairly high risk of them passing it on to other people on the ward. And so they are not allowed to come. So people are suggesting having a backup as a birth partner. So having, I also think that, you know, one of the most important things you can do to mean that you have your partner there is to try and keep them healthy. So make sure that they're following the social distancing rules, make sure that they're not putting themselves at increased risk of getting it wherever possible so that they can come. It's difficult. It's definitely difficult. You know, there are other ways, technology, you know, being able to FaceTime in the room. I did a consultation the other day. The partner wasn't there, but we had the phone on speakerphone. So he was able to hear everything and then could ask questions. It's not the same as being there, but it is still something to allow you to have more information. In theatre, we are letting partners come in. In an operating theatre, there's 10 people working in there. So letting a partner come in who is symptomatic potentially could infect all of those people. So we are letting partners who are asymptomatic come in. They do need to kind of sit down and stay, you know, and wear a mask, as would the woman giving birth. But we still feel like it's really important from a support point of view to have that partner there. But yeah, it's not easy.
No, but it isn't easy. You're absolutely right. But I think it's good for people to get an understanding of what that actually looks like and why as well. You know, I think a lot of the explanation you gave, even though it's kind of obvious, it's good to hear it and really kind of imagine what that looks like in practice and why some of the things you mentioned we completely want to avoid for all of our sakes.
Well, if you're on a labour ward, you don't want to catch it from somebody else who's there with symptoms, and then you go home and be unwell. So it's about keeping everybody safe. And it is something that hopefully some people, I think it was a shock when that was announced last week, people didn't see that coming. But it is something that people can plan for if they know, so if they're going to give birth in the next couple of weeks, to have a backup birth partner to try to keep their partner as much as possible from getting ill. There's also issues if your partner falls into a high risk category. Is it really a good idea for them to then come to hospital and put themselves under unnecessary risk? Most visitors in the hospital aren't allowed at all, and they're only really coming in for beginning of life and end of life. So there's a lot less people in the hospital, and definitely these decisions aren't taken lightly, but it's about protecting the staff, protecting the patients, and protecting the visitors.
No, you're absolutely right. No, that's great. Is there anything else that we should be knowing? How can we look after ourselves? How can we look after you guys who are doing the most incredible job? And, you know, I didn't say it at the beginning, I plan to say it at the end, I'm just going to say it now. Thank you so much for everything you and all of your colleagues are doing. It's just the fact that you are there, like on the front line. I know it's said over and over again, but you know, you are there on the front line. You are there putting yourself in these smaller rooms, in these busy, essentially, labour wards. And we just can't thank you enough for bringing our babies safely into the world. It's just, and looking after all of the people who are listening. It's just incredible. So thank you.
Well, we are doing what we do, and we are all there to get these babies with their parents home safely. And that's, you know, we would do that. You know, that's what we want to do. We have to keep ourselves safe. But yeah, it's a pleasure to do it, even in these times.
Oh, bless you. Honestly, it's incredible. So how can we protect you, protect us? Like, I don't even know where I'm going with this question necessarily, or if there is an answer, should I say. But, you know, with the stuff that we're bringing in, you know, should we be bringing in less stuff as much, you know, where possible, our hospital bags? I guess we're not ideally going to be there any longer than we need to be, but that's fairly standard anyway, isn't it? So
I think people will probably go home a little bit sooner, because there will be more motivation to do that. They won't go home when it's unsafe to do so, but I think we're trying to streamline that because we want people to be back home as quickly as possible. I think, yeah, you don't need to bring to hospital, you know, enough for a week. Babies don't actually need very much at all. And I think one of the things that will come out of this whole situation is maybe us realising that we do need less, and maybe, you know, can streamline lots of things, hopefully, is what will come out of it. But I think that one of the things that people can do to protect us is to be honest about their symptoms and about their partner's symptoms, and to make sure that we can try and plan as much as possible. So if we know that you've got a bit of a temperature, say for example you're due to have a cesarean section, it could potentially wait a few days if we know about it. There's lots of things. So I think being honest and open with your midwife about the situation that you're in at home and the situation that your family are in at home. I think being prepared makes it easier in the fact that you will know a little bit more about what to expect, and your anxiety levels will hopefully be less if you're prepared. And I think just all of us being kind to each other, and so being some understanding from the patients that we're in a more difficult situation, and understanding from us that our patients are in a more difficult situation. And I think that there is so much anxiety around birth, and there's so much, even in normal situations, and people have plans and things don't necessarily go to plan. So I think we just all have to go into it with a little bit more of an open mind, that things might not be exactly how they want us to be for anything really at the moment, but that we can still, you know, achieve that end goal again. But just letting things go a little bit more, I don't know.
Yeah, no, I have said this time and time again. You know, I was really nervous, scared about giving birth. I knew it was going to happen. I just didn't know how it was going to happen. And the way that I got through it is like you do with everything, although obviously it's a pretty big thing. You know, it's just literally one minute, 1 hour, 1 day at a time. And suddenly you're there. And I guess the only difference, and I say only very tentatively, because I know it does feel like the world around us is so different as well. But as far as the giving birth thing, in theory, what I'm hearing from you is the only difference is that you're wearing masks and glasses and that things might take a touch longer, but hopefully that shouldn't be too much of an issue. And then obviously the big one is the birthing partner, but they should be there for, I don't want to say the important bit, because I was induced and I was there for several days beforehand, and mentally I found that really difficult, and it was really important that my husband was there, although he did go home at night time, you know, so he could get a proper sleep. He wasn't there all the time, but having him there did obviously support me. But through the kind of the key bit, should I say, the actual delivery, that's when your birth partner will be there.
That's definitely how it is at the moment, where people draw the line as to when that is happening. But it makes sense that once you're in a delivery room, then your partner can be in a delivery room, because it's a room rather than an open ward. And I think what will happen on the induction wards is that the women will support each other more. I think that we, you know, you tend to close the curtains and stay with your partner behind the curtain if you're having an induction, which can be a really long process, and it is a difficult time if you don't see your partner. But you can still see your partner, you can still FaceTime, you can still talk to them. So we're lucky that we have that level of communication at the moment. And I think the women will just support each other more. I think the midwives will be able to support each other more. So I think it would be different, but we're all, you know, people are going to be supporting each other. Sometimes partners can be a bit of a hindrance through that process. They get quite impatient and they can be worried about the car parking. That's what I often find that they're worried about. So, you know, it doesn't necessarily all have to be negative. It is scary to go into a hospital with strangers and not have your partner there. But it's still a friendly environment with lots of people to help you.
I think, or my theory, I guess, with partners is that, so, and this was through IVF and everything, and I suspect through lots and lots of things outside of fertility and babies, it can be so much harder watching someone go through something than to actually be doing it yourself, you know? Mm-hmm. And so that's why they have their anxieties. One of the other positives, on a light note, is that if there aren't partners in the room, now this isn't to say that women don't snore, but there might be a little bit less snoring that goes on, because that's often a complaint.
It sounds so old-fashioned now, but you know, men used to be down the pub when women gave birth, and that was fine. We've changed our mentality and our expectations over the years, definitely for the better, but yeah, there are some pros and cons. The hospital is a quieter place, which means we can just get on and do things. The normal wards are quieter, where they don't have this sort of traffic of visitors going backwards and forwards. And that is important for people just being able to get on with their jobs. And that probably will streamline the discharge process as well, because there's not people wandering around everywhere.
Yeah, I can see that that makes for a calmer environment. And like you say, kind of more streamlined, which will hopefully mean that people feel, and not that they weren't being looked after properly previously, but, you know, really attended to, which is a real positive. And one of the positives that you mentioned earlier on, I really hope that it's the case, is that all the women there are looking after each other. And certainly I was in an environment for my induction and also postnatally where the curtains were all drawn in the ward. And I felt a bit sad about that. And when a midwife came in to the ward once I'd had Ren, and one day she just opened all the curtains and the air was just, it was just lovely. Yeah. And I know that, you know, it's a bit compromised at the moment potentially, so it wouldn't be quite as lovely. But yeah, it was really nice to see each other and actually to talk to each other rather than being cooped up in our own little bays. So yeah, I would implore anyone out there who is in a ward and, you know, partners aren't there to really try and strike up the conversations with other people, because you are all in that together. You know, you're all going through it, whatever the background to the pregnancy, to the people. And it makes me think, and I know lots of people will be nodding their heads now, or I assume they will be, but think about our fertility clinics and, you know, how we all keep our heads down there and we're all going through it. We probably follow each other anonymously on Instagram and we don't talk to each other. So let's really try and make those labour wards, you know, the antithesis, is that the right word, of that?
Yeah. you know, we are all going through the same experience. And so, and there's plenty to talk about, you know, it's not like you have to make small talk. There's plenty to talk about at the moment. And everyone will have their different story about how this is affecting them. And, you know, there's so many layers to it. And I really think that, well, certainly I remember, you know, my parents' generation, probably they didn't go to antenatal classes. So they didn't have this kind of NCT group of friends, but they did know the woman who was next to them in the bed. And often they stayed friends forever, where you can't go to face-to-face NCT at the moment. You know, there's other ways of meeting people in the same situation.
Yeah, I feel like I've heard those stories around still now, I guess, but more yesteryear from kind of older generations about how, oh, yeah, well, we were born on the same day in the same hospital in the same ward. And that's, you know, we've known each other since. And I, yeah, there's something lovely about that. So hopefully that can be one of the positives, as well as bringing home your gorgeous, long awaited, happy, healthy little ones as well. And the important bit really will be looking after them and being their mums and their dads and loving them and giving them the best life that they could ever ask for, because I know 100% that's exactly what you're going to do. If you're out there and pregnant right now and due to give birth in the coming weeks or months, I know that's exactly what you're going to do. So, oh, thank you so much, Sarah. It's such a pleasure to bring, you know, your conversation straight to people directly, because they're not always getting that kind of line in. And it is hard, you know, like you said yourself, doing some of the calls over the phone, you know, like people aren't seeing midwives face to face. And so I think getting an understanding about why that's the case and also an understanding of what to expect, I think hopefully, you know, is really important. And I know that people will really appreciate it.
I do think that we've been through a big reconfiguration. We have been through a huge reconfiguration. And I think that it will settle, and that those appointments that have been delayed, which actually cause anxiety, will be rescheduled in a different way. But there was definitely a period of time where everything was just thrown up in the air. And to keep certain services going, which obviously have to keep going, there just had to be a little bit of time where there's going to be teething problems with that. When people work out, you know, how do we do this differently? How do we set up the software? How do we set up the, you know, what, do we have enough computers to do this? You know, there's so many things that take a bit of time. You can't just suddenly switch from face to face to another option straight away. So yeah, I'm hoping that those things will get better, and as the shock sort of is settled and the dust sort of settles, and while it's still all going on, obviously the core services, which obstetrics and, you know, and babies being born is not going away, that, you know, that will just settle into a pattern and a routine that people will get used to.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Sarah. And like I said before, thank you so much for everything you and all of your colleagues are doing. You really are incredible.
Well, so are you. And I think it's really good to get all this information out there as much as possible.
Brilliant. All right, then. Well, you take care and you stay safe, okay?
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye. Bye.